listening to Educating from the Heart. Thank you for joining our lively conversations with teachers, support professionals, parents, and students as they share issues that matter most in our public schools. Here are your hosts, Tina Dunbar and Luke Flint.
Thank you for joining us on Educating from the Heart. On this episode, we'll talk about job security or the lack of it for Florida teachers. We'll also explore why educators have given the state a failing grade for its vaccine distribution. Welcome back. I'm Tina Dunbar with my co-host, Luke Flint. Hi, Luke. Happy first episode for 2021.
Happy 2021, Tina. You know, I don't think a lot of people understand how perilous it is to be a teacher in Florida right now. We're one of only three states in the country where teachers do not have due process. That means they serve as at-will employees. And at the end of the school year, their contract can be non-renewed for any reason, or as happens all too often, non-renewed for no reason at all.
Luke, let's name it. Senate Bill 736, the Student Success Act. It was the very first bill that Governor Rick Scott signed into law in 2011. It has drastically changed the landscape for teachers. One element of the law that has devastated the teaching force has been the stripping away of the ability for teachers to earn a multi-year renewable employment agreement known as a professional services contract, or PSC. Now, I want to be clear, we're not talking about tenure here. Also consider lifelong job protections, because that never existed for Florida's K-12 teachers.
Exactly. But what PSC did do is it ensured job stability and due process before a teacher could be terminated. And they had to earn their PSC status, and that's a key word. It took many years and many, many observations by a principal before someone could earn the right to have their PSC. You know, it makes you wonder why Governor Scott and the Florida GOP were so interested in eliminating these job protections, which again can be non-renewed without cause, not even giving a teacher the opportunity to improve.
Well, if you remember, the rhetoric back when this law was being debated was kind of bizarre. Lawmakers said eliminating job security would help with recruitment and retention. It didn't make sense to me then, and now we have the evidence. It has created a culture of fear, intimidation, and increased instability in districts statewide. In fact, our first guest is an annual contract teacher who is asked to remain anonymous out of fear of retaliation. She's a certified teacher who has taught in Florida for several years and hopes to continue her career here. We also have two other teachers joining the discussion.
Yeah, you know, the instability isn't just bad for teachers and students. It's bad for school districts as a whole. So we will hear from a school district administrator who is doing everything that she can to provide stability while following the letter of the law. We'll start, though, by asking our annual contract teacher to help our listeners understand how her job status impacts her work.
You know, you can do a really good job. I feel like a lot of annual contractor teachers I've talked to feel like they can do a really good job and do everything right, but then, you know, we all make mistakes, and teachers can't be perfect. So I think it's living with that fear that that little mistake that you made in, you know, September might be the reason that you don't get asked to come back the next year, that you don't get your renewal on your contract. So I live in a little bit of fear that I'm not going to have a job the next year. And a lot of times we don't find out until April or even May. So then really there's a lot of fear about trying to find another position quickly. It's just something I kind of constantly have in the back of my head thinking about. And I think it pushes me to, again, want to be perfect. I don't feel like I can at all ever take any small kind of break. Everything has to be on all the time because I'm so concerned about not getting my contract renewed. it's exhausting. I mean, it is the mental hoops that I jump through all the time in my brain. It just makes me really, really tired. And I don't really try to be as innovative as I probably could, because I would feel that if someone walked in, it might be seen as a waste of time, or that, you know, if it failed, well, that just wasted a whole day of class, you know, and that just, I just feel like there's a constant tally mark above my head that tallies up all of the mistakes that I make throughout my teaching year. And that, you know, oh, once you get to a certain mark, well, you're done, find another job. And in reality, it's more complex than that, but it does feel that way a lot of times. And not just to myself, I have a group of annual contract teachers that we all came in at the same time at my school and another school. And we all kind of feel that way. It's taken a mental toll on just who I am as a teacher.
I've heard some annual contract or AC teachers express concerns about talking with administrators about specific student needs. All educators should feel free to advocate for their students. Do teachers need due process when standing up for themselves and their students?
I won't say that I feel completely silenced, but it does add another layer, a weight that comes with knowing that you feel strongly enough that you should go talk to your principal another administrator about advocating for your students in your classroom, but knowing that maybe it's not going to be received in the best way. There's like kind of that weight of, well, what if this makes them view me badly? Well, I don't know if maybe I should just keep silent. Maybe I'll just wait and see if it gets better. And I have found myself pushing a lot of things to the side because I don't want to be either that teacher that's annoying, that's always in their office. And I don't want to be that, because I don't want to be seen as a nuisance, because who wants to keep around the teacher that's annoying or a nuisance? But also, I don't want to be the difficult teacher. I think that's kind of what it does too, being on annual contract. You want to avoid labels. If you're going to give me a label, then I hope it's that I'm, you know, the workhorse, not that I am the trouble teacher.
This is Luke. And I'm wondering if you could maybe provide a specific instance or two, if you can think of one, of something where you have had that internal struggle, a situation where you knew you needed to advocate, but there was also that fear of maybe not wanting, as you said, to get on the principal's bad side or to be labeled as a complainer.
Yes. Yeah, I can think of one specifically, and it's not just at my school. I think it's kind of a countywide policy that's developing, which is the idea of giving the 50s versus the zeros. So even if a student doesn't turn in anything, still giving them a 50. Or if they do one thing on that, like write their name, giving them a 50, which started in elementary school and is kind of working its way up through middle and some of high school. And I was kind of among the teachers that wanted to push back on that, but I never did, because I felt like I wasn't in a secure enough place to say anything, even though I felt strongly about them getting credit for not doing any work, that wasn't going to help them in the long run. You know, I thought I knew what was best for my students, and I felt strongly about something, but I still sat back and didn't say anything, even though other teachers did. They said plenty. I did not join in on that because I felt like I was in a more rocky, precarious situation than they were.
I understand. Thank you so much for your honesty. We now have a few more teachers joining our conversation. Victoria Smith is the president of the Citrus County Education Association. From Lee County, we have Kevin Daly. He's the president of the Lee County Education Association. And with him is Dr. Angela Pruitt, an administrator in Lee County Schools. Thank you for joining us. It's been a decade since Senate Bill 736 passed. It's the law that banned continuing contracts and instituted annual contracts as the law of the land. By now, the instructional staff in most Florida districts must be primarily annual contract teachers. I believe I heard a statewide average of about 60%. How has this transition impacted the teaching profession, and has it curbed the educator shortage?
We're a small county. So when you look at our teacher shortage is 17 vacancies. And that seems small, but it really isn't. We only have 1,124 approximately teachers. So that many is quite a bit of vacancies. And what the problem is, though, is then you're looking at 13 out of those 17 is classroom, by the way. So that's approximately 234 students that are being impacted. So it's not just so much the teachers, you know, with that vacancies, it's the students that are hurting because of it. Because now you have full-time substitutes in. I'm a high school teacher, I teach geometry. So when I have a student that had a substitute, full-time substitute in algebra for the whole year or even half of the year, and then they come into my class, they're now struggling in math because they don't have that foundation of algebra. So having the annual contract is not very productive in keeping teachers.
You know, when you look at schools, they're not only buildings, they're communities. And so, you know, I think the best thing for these communities, these school communities, is stability. And I know my daughter's lucky enough to actually have the same third grade teacher when they went through elementary school. And he's still there. And he had been there, you know, a long time before my daughters ever had him. The idea that you know, there's this reliability and the same staff, and they build relationship with children and families across communities and across the county and, you know, beyond the school walls. I mean, it's so important for the school to be a place of stability in the community, because that stable workforce in the schools produces stable communities. As you know, I've heard from teachers who say, you know, the bank is kind of hesitant on giving me a mortgage because they understand I'm an annual contract teacher. And, you know, there's record turnover and it really hasn't solved the teacher shortage. And so, you know, I think it's time to reconsider the idea that, you know, everybody is an annual contract teacher.
You know, as we move forward, I think there needs to be some kind of avenue that allows districts to offer that if that's what they choose to do, because it would give a sense of security for our teachers. I mean, how great would it be if we could say, well, listen, you know, we will guarantee your employment for X number of years.
I think Kevin was spot on when he said that the legislature created this problem and it is incumbent upon them to solve it by doing away with this legislation. But I know in Lee County, you're not just waiting for the legislature to do the right thing, that you're taking steps in Lee in order to provide a sense of stability to the extent possible.
Teachers are the most important asset. And, you know, as we all know, the thing that makes the difference in the success of the student. And so we tell principals they're not allowed to release a teacher without, there's a certain checklist that they have to follow. There's things they have to do. There's, you know, support they have to provide. There's coaching they have to provide. There's a whole checklist of things that they have to do before they're allowed to release someone.
The language is set up because I know the law says, you know, there can't be any assumption of reappointment or any guarantee of reappointment, but it certainly lays the groundwork to say that you know, if you're doing what you're supposed to do, the expectation is, and there's a job there, you know, the expectation is you're going to be reappointed. And
I still hear stories of effective and highly effective teachers being dismissed. How is your local dealing with that?
If that situation exists, we have teachers who are able to appeal their non-reappointment to the district and then, you know, be placed at another school, because part of the conversation I'm starting to have with Dr. Pruitt these days is not around probationary releases, but around probationary transfers. You know, maybe they're a great high school math teacher, but not necessarily a really good middle school math teacher, you know, for whatever reason, having struggling in middle school. You know, the idea of probationary transfers through that first year and getting people the support they need.
We all know that somebody can be at a school and they're just not good at supporting or providing, you know, guidance for new teachers. And so I think it's our responsibility as a district to make sure that we've done everything we can do to help the teacher to be successful. My advice would be give us the flexibility, give us local control relative to what we want to offer to the people that work in our district. That's what I would want. Give me local control.
So most annual contract teachers received a huge pay hike this year, and while I'm sure you're all grateful, I do have to ask you, is it enough? I mean, is it enough to cover the cost of not securing multi-year employment for Florida's certified teachers?
Probably no amount of money that you could put on the table right now would make me feel better than being given a multi-year contract, because it would allow a little bit of breathing room and some room for innovation. And I think there's a lot of educators, at least the ones that I've talked to, again, that are annual contracts, that feel that way. Money is nice, but it's not loyal. It doesn't buy loyalty. And I do feel loyal to my school, but I don't feel as much loyalty back because I don't know if they're going to want to keep me around next year or not, because it's always changing.
That was a powerful statement about employee loyalty. Legislators have often justified their actions by saying that our schools need to be run more like businesses, but no business would survive without a stable workforce. Right now, almost 70% of Lee County teachers are on an annual contract, which is slightly higher than the state average.
Wow, that is very high. As a parent, I'm concerned about district instability and teachers being afraid to advocate for themselves and their students. That's a problem. But I'm impressed by the collaboration between the union and the school district. They've found an innovative approach to retaining and growing the workforce, which ultimately helps students and the community.
And we didn't even have time to mention the Grow Your Own program, which cultivates interest in a teaching career long before students graduate high school. The district continues to invest in the community by offering scholarships to get new educators who commit to teaching in the district once they get their degree. You know, Kevin really said it the best. The Lee County School District is the community.
You're right. It's a great model on how unions and school districts can work together to solve common problems. It also addresses why it's important for school employees to have the ability to belong to a membership organization or a union if they choose. In this case, highly effective and effective certified teachers are not guaranteed a job, but the union has made sure they have some safeguards. We're going to take a break for a quick message. We'll return in a moment.
We already know that teaching can be a high-stress job, as we just heard about the daily stress and anxiety that so many of our annual contract teachers endure. And there is tons of research on school employees who struggle with feeling overwhelmed and disrespected. We're not surprised to recognize working through the uncertainty of the pandemic has impacted morale. In fact, a recent survey by EdWeek, a national publication that follows education trends, shows that teacher morale is at its lowest point ever.
Well, look, we're entering the second semester of the 2021 school year with a large number of students returning to in-person learning, a skyrocketing COVID positivity rate, and the possibility of more sporadic quarantines in schools statewide. Since the school year started, the state health department has identified tens of thousands of infections in public and private schools involving students and staff. Since the virus is spreading so quickly, the White House Coronavirus Task Force has specifically recommended requiring weekly testing for Florida's K through 12 teachers. The good news is a vaccine is in sight, but only a shot in the arm can ease.
Joining us now from Brevard County are Tracy Stiles, a high school math teacher with over a decade of experience, and Anthony Colucci, a national board certified teacher with 15 years experience at the elementary level, who currently serves as president of the Brevard Federation of Teachers.
As you know, right now, some states have already started vaccinating their school employees. Others are making plans. You know, the CDC has recognized that teachers are frontline workers who should receive the shot. But that is not happening here in the state of Florida. How do you feel about that?
Well, our teachers are essential workers, and if we want to continue to have our schools opening and having fewer quarantines for students and teachers, we need to get shots into our teachers' arms, those who want a vaccination, as soon as possible. So our teachers, many of our teachers are anxious to get their vaccine and are ready to go as soon as the opportunity presents itself.
How do you feel, Tracy?
I just looked up the cdc.gov, the CDC's recommendations yesterday when I was asked to talk here. And that's when it really hit me that we were skipped over. And that does not make me very happy. I would definitely have liked to have been vaccinated or, you know, at least given the option to go. I mean, I fear catching it and I fear bringing it home to my child. I mean, I don't understand why he doesn't think teachers qualify. We are essential workers. Kids are sick and they pass stuff through and you catch it from the kids no matter what it is. And with this COVID-19, it's scary because it affects so many people in so many different ways and it could be very negatively. And, you know, just and the way it's so contagious, I wish, you know, we should get that shot just to keep ourselves and our families safe. And that way we can keep the schools up and running appropriately as well.
And I would add to that the CDC really thought out the distribution plan. They didn't just come up with that on the fly. There was intensive research done and decision making in order to come up with this plan. And Governor DeSantis chose to just look at death rates rather than looking at death rates as well as keeping our society functioning and rolling as we need it to be. We need our students learning, and he's putting that in jeopardy by skipping over teachers and staff. And ultimately, we see that when he didn't follow the CDC guidelines, we have a failed rollout plan that has been a disaster. When we have elderly people waiting outside overnight in the cold to get a vaccine, when we have folks who are over 65 and older calling endlessly over and over and over again, trying to schedule an appointment, and ultimately some of them giving up because they're having no success. It should be obvious to all Floridians that Governor DeSantis had no plan and didn't follow the plan that he was giving. And this is not beneficial for any of us.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting, Anthony, that you said vaccinate teachers who want to be vaccinated in order to keep society running. School districts are one of the largest, if not the largest, employers in most districts. I mean, so in a very real sense, you know, if we want the economy to thrive, if we want all of the things that Governor DeSantis says he wants, putting aside the importance of in-person instruction, it's good for communities when teachers are safe.
Absolutely. We saw what happened over the spring when we were forced into quarantine and schools closed down. And we saw that the parents, in many cases, were unable to go to work because there was nobody at home to watch your children, or were forced with the difficult decision of leaving their children at home and going to work. So what was prepared was a common sense rollout, and what DeSantis did was a nightmare that it's not benefiting any of us.
Now, he's saying that teachers should wait for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is still in trial and may be approved soon. We don't know. It's that one time shot rather than the double dose, but we don't know when that's going to be available. This sounds more like politics over health and safety.
It sounds like DeSantis is trying to have his cake and eat it too, right? He wants the economy up and functioning. He wants to give the vaccine to elderly folks who make up 4.5 million voters in Florida. But ultimately what he's really doing is he's putting our teachers and our staff and our students at risk in order to garner votes.
Tracy, what are you doing to better protect yourself at school now, knowing that the positivity rate is increasing?
I'm definitely wearing my KN95 mask. I have positioned my classroom to where my desk is at least 6 feet away from the nearest row of students. I have rearranged all my testing. I do not hand out very many paper and pencil tests anymore. Most of it is done online for every student. And
is it more difficult to teach in person under these current circumstances?
It is more difficult to teach in person. I feel that a lot of my teaching is facial expressions. I mean, I teach math, but I still make faces. And I sit there and look at them when they get it right. And I have to really kind of reflect that. And I have to verbalize more. I feel like I have to speak louder because I have this mask on my face and I feel like they can't hear me. You know, sometimes it is hard to breathe. And if the air conditioning's not working properly in the room, it's really uncomfortable with the mask on. And I usually will teach from the front of the room at the board. Or sometimes I'll stand at my desk and I'll just project what I'm writing so they can see that. But the students prefer me standing right in front of them and getting all up and personal and kind of in their faces. They prefer that. They pay attention better when I'm like that. So I alternate between lessons as far as where I'm teaching in my classroom. And then I try to walk around a little bit, but even then I'm like, okay, you've been coughing, so I'm staying away from you.
As we record this in early January, we know that the state has really threatened, with financial penalties, districts, if they do not return as many students as possible to in-person instruction. So have you seen an uptick in students returning?
In my classroom, I've kept everything uniform for the kids that were online as well as the ones in the room. So for them to come from online into my classroom, it's a very easy switch. Right now, I have not seen a huge uptick in change of whatever. The kids have been quarantined. I've had quite a few go out in quarantine last week, and so they're gone, and then next week we're changing semesters, so I'll get a whole new group of students. I have looked ahead to see about how many I have on e-learning versus in person, and it looks like coming in, my trig and analysis of functions classes are about 50-50. It's a little less than that. Like I have more in the room than I have online. But then the Honors Algebra 2 class, that class I have 30 kids and I literally have 6 of them right now marked as e-learning. So that'll be a class with 24 students in the room and 6 online.
One of the major concerns that Tracy touched on is especially at our high schools, we have students flip-flopping modalities, flip-flopping from brick and mortar to e-learning on a daily basis in some cases, a block-by-block basis. And that's become a real frustration for our teachers, as well as students who are out on legitimate quarantines who are switching from brick and mortar to e-learning. So I was talking to a group of secondary teachers about the return of more students to brick and mortar, And it almost doesn't even matter because there's been so much turnover amongst these students anyways. They're like, well, I got four coming in, but I got six on quarantine. So, you know, it's not potentially making a huge difference in our secondary schools. But that was something that we tried to work on in negotiations with the district, was to stop these students from concerns about a student flip-flopping frequently. The administrator would contact the parent and attempt to work on the issue. But it seems to be a bigger problem in secondary schools where kids are driving themselves and playing sports and so on.
Do you believe that this vaccine is the first step to a cure of returning to normal in school?
I certainly see that to be the case. There's still some questions as to how well the vaccine will prevent the transmission of COVID-19. However, it seems that if you have less teachers and staff and potentially students demonstrating symptoms, they're not sneezing, they're not coughing, that their spread is going to be reduced as well. So it's tough to say whether teachers are getting it at school or they're getting it elsewhere, but especially with our older students, our secondary students, there's good indication that they're spreading COVID-19 on similar levels as adults. And unfortunately, in Brevard County, we lost our first teacher to COVID about a month or so ago, and she was a secondary teacher. I actually just talked to one of her good friends the other day who once again explained this was a teacher who was trying to be cautious. She was not going a lot of places after school. She was going to the grocery store and going to work. And her biggest fear was that she was going to bring home COVID-19 to her mother who lived with her. And it appears that's exactly what happened, because her mother died of COVID about a day before she did. So in a situation like that, can we say for sure if it happened at the transmission happened at school? No, but is it likely? It was likely that transmission happened at school. That's why we need every precaution in place. You know, we need to be concerned about the social distancing, the contact tracing, the protective equipment. We need it all in place, and we need to be confident with it. And I certainly think as more students return, it's going to be harder to guarantee good social distancing. There's some classes where there is proper social distancing, but those classes are going to be few and far between as students return. So that's why, as essential workers, teachers need to have that vaccine available to them if they want to take it.
One issue that we've already discussed is that Governor DeSantis has ignored the CDC recommendations and not put teachers where the federal government says they should be in line. A separate issue is distribution. Even if Governor DeSantis said teachers are first in line, right now people are struggling to get it, right? Even the people who qualify are struggling to get it. I saw some information yesterday that suggested only 1/3 of all of the vaccines in Florida have actually been distributed. I'm wondering if it might make sense to use schools as a distribution site, because you could then not only ensure that the essential workers, the teachers, get vaccinated, it's an opportunity to educate the community, and it provides an infrastructure, because every single county has schools, right? So it's a built-in possible infrastructure and a way to get more vaccines to more people quickly. Any thoughts either of you have on that?
Well, one meme I saw recently said, they should have put a team of elementary teachers who's in charge of the car loop in charge of the vaccine distribution. It would have went much smoother. So I certainly think there's truth to that. But yeah, it's a logical way to distribute the vaccine. Would have been school by school basis. Here in our district, they already do that with the flu shot. They will come out to school. They'll set up a calendar, come out to schools, administer the flu shot. Easy peasy, well organized. You know your time, you know your date, and it gets done at our 90 plus sites in Brevard County. So it certainly seems like a better approach than the haphazard free-for-all that's occurred up to this point.
The state has added more distribution sites, but working educators over age 65 are still struggling to get the vaccine on their own. So several school districts have started partnering with their county health departments to offer a limited number of doses to eligible educators. Here in Tallahassee, the Leon County Classroom Teachers Association recently offered shots to their members.
You know, that's a really great idea, and another example of how unions help their members in times of need. But as always, there's another complication. The state is running dangerously low on its supply of vaccinations. Our state Surgeon General has issued a request to the federal government to boost the number of doses of the next shipment. We'll see. But there is hope on the horizon. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine may soon head to the FDA for approval and be available shortly for distribution.
That's our show. I want to thank our guests and our listeners. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to check our show notes page for additional information, and please encourage your friends to subscribe at feaweb.org/podcast.
We'd love to read your email. Send your feedback, ideas, and suggestions to heart@floridaea.org. That email address again is heart@floridaea.org. Or you can send a voicemail by calling 850-201-3384. That's 201-3384. We hope to hear from you.
Join us for our next episode. Until you tune in again, keep educating from the heart.
Hi, this is FEA President Andrew Sparr. To stay on top of all the latest news and issues impacting our public schools, be sure to follow FEA on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. For more information on this podcast, visit feaweb.org/podcast.
Educating from the Heart is a production of the Florida Education Association. FEA is the statewide educators union with more than 150,000 members, including teachers, education staff professionals, higher education faculty, graduate assistants, students preparing to become teachers, and retired educators.